Chapter 6. I'm being watched. The feeling stays with me during a tedious dinner of lamb and potatoes followed by pudding. Who would be watching me and why? That is, who else besides the girls of Spence, who eye me and whisper to each other, stopping only when Mrs. Nightwing reprimands one girl for letting her fork droop. When dinner is finished, we are allowed a free period in the Great Hall. This is the time we're given to be at ease, to read, laugh, socialize, or just lie about. The Great Hall is just that, enormous. A massive fireplace commands the center of one wall. Six beautifully engraved marble columns form a circle in the middle of the room. Mythical creatures have been carved into each one, winged fairies, nymphs, and satyrs. Strange decor, to say the least. At one end of the room, the younger girls sit playing with dolls. Some have gathered to read, some to embroider, and some to gossip. In the best possible corner, Pippa and Felicity are holding court with a few other girls. Felicity has cordoned off a sitting area and turned it into her own fiefdom, complete with gypsy scarves that make it seem like a sheikh's tent. Whatever she is telling the others seems to have them hanging on her every word. I have no idea how thrilling it might be, since I've not been invited. Not that I want to be invited. Not much, anyway. Anne is nowhere to be found. I can't very well stand in the centre of the room like an imbecile with no redeeming social value, so I find a quiet seat near the roaring fire and open my mother's diary. Though I haven't looked through it in a month or so, I'm in the mood to torture myself tonight. In the firelight, Mother's elegant handwriting dances on the page. It's surprising how just the sight of her words on paper makes tears sting at my eyes. So much about her has begun to fade away. I want to keep holding on. And so I read, flipping through page after page of notes about teas and visits to temples and housekeeping lists, until I come to this, her very last entry. June the 2nd. Gemma is cross with me again. She wants desperately to go to London. That will of iron is formidable, and I am quite exhausted by it all. What will her birthday bring? It is agonizing to wait, and torture to have her loathe me so. Sentences go blurry, words run together as the tears pool. I wish I could go back and change everything. What are you doing? Anne asks, hovering over me. I wipe at my wet cheeks with the back of my hand, keep my head down. Nothing. Anne takes a seat and pulls out some knitting from a basket. I like to read too. Have you ever read The Perils of Lucy, a girl's ode story? No, I can't say that I have. I know the type of book she means. Cheap, sentimental claptrap about put-upon girls triumphing over adversity without ever losing that sweet, kind-hearted feminine softness everyone seems to prize so highly. The kind of girls who would never cause their families to worry and suffer. Girls nothing like me. The bitterness is too much to contain. Oh, wait, I reply. That's the one where the heroine is some poor, timid girl at boarding school who gets bullied by everyone for being such a sap. She reads to the blind, or raises a lame brother, or perhaps even a blind and lame brother. And in the end, everyone discovers she's really a duchess or some such, who goes off to live like a queen in Kent. All because she took her punishment with a smile and a sense of Christian charity. What poppycock! My breath keeps catching in my chest. I've been overheard by the embroider and gossip set, who giggle in shocked delight at my bad manners. It might happen, Anne says softly. Honestly, I say, with a brittle laugh, as if it will excuse the harshness of my words. Do you know any orphan girls who've been plucked from obscurity and made into duchesses? Get yourself under control, Gemma. You mustn't cry. Anne's voice takes on a new determination. But it could happen, couldn't it? An orphan girl, a girl no one expected much from, someone who'd been dumped in a school because her relatives thought of her as a burden, a girl the other girls laugh at for her lack of grace, charm and beauty. That girl might show them all one day. She stares into the fire, knitting ferociously, the needles clicking together, two sharp teeth in the wool. Too late, I realized what I've done. I've struck at the very heart of Anne's hope, a hope that she could become someone else, someone with a life that doesn't involve spending the rest of her days as governess to some rich man's children, grooming them for a wonderful life and opportunities she'll never see. Yes, I say, my voice hoarse and quiet. Yes, I suppose it could happen. Those girls, the ones who misjudged Lucy, they'd all be very sorry one day, wouldn't they? Yes, they would, I agree. I don't know what else to say, and so we sit and watch the fire crackle and spit. Peals of high laughter draw our attention to the far corner. Pippa emerges from the gypsy tent where the other girls still sit. She saunters over to the two of us and slips her arm through Anne's. Anne, darling, Felicity and I feel simply awful about the way we treated you earlier. It was terribly unchristian of us. Anne's face is still slack, but she blushes, and I know she is pleased, sure that this is the beginning of her new, wonderful life among the beautiful. The end of the perils of Anne. Felicity's mother sent a box of chocolates. Would you like to join us? There is no invitation issued to me. It's a huge slight. Across the room, the other girls are waiting to see how I'll take it. Anne glances at me guiltily, and I know what her answer will be. She's going to sit and eat chocolates with the very girls who torment her. And now I know that Anne is as shallow as the rest of them. More than ever, I wish I could go home. But there is no more home. Well, Anne says, looking down at her feet. I should just let her wallow in her discomfort, force her to snub me, but I'm not about to let them get the best of me. You should go, I say, flashing a smile that would put the sun to shame. I really must catch up on my reading. Yes, after all, if I were to join you, I might enjoy myself, and wouldn't that be a shame? Please, don't spare me another thought. Pippa is all smiles. There's a sport. Come on, Anne. She waltzes Anne off to the far end of the room. With a forced yawn for the benefit of the girls watching me from the tent, I sit down and open my mother's social diary again, as if I could care less about being ignored. I turn the pages as if I'm captivated, though I've already read each one. Who do they think they are to treat me like this? Turn another page and another. More giggles waft out from the gypsy tent. The chocolate's probably from Manchester, and those scarves are ridiculous. Felicity is about as bohemian as the Bank of England. My fingers land on something crackly and stiff inside the book, something I hadn't noticed before. A newspaper account from a sensational London newspaper, the sort the upper classes pretend not to notice. It's been folded over so many times the ink has worn away in the creases and elsewhere, making it hard to read. I can just make out the gist of it. Something about the scandalous secrets of girls' boarding schools. It's tawdry, of course, and that's what makes it so fascinating. In lurid prose, the article details a school in Wales where a few girls went out walking and were never heard from again. A virtuous rose of England snipped by the tragic dagger of suicide at a finishing school in Scotland. A mention of a girl who went mad as a hatter after some mysterious involvement in a diabolical occult ring. What's diabolical is that someone received a paycheck for this rubbish.